You're listening to The Blind Spot, a podcast from Thomas Pocklington Trust.
Hello, I'm Darren Pascal, Technology Information Champion at Thomas Pocklington Trust. And as this week is National Braille Week, this special episode of the Blind Spot podcast is all about Braille. For nearly 200 years, the tactile Braille system that has enabled blind people to read and write. While styluses and writing frames are still in use today, modern Braille can take many different forms. Yet, in an age where synthetic speech and audiobooks are widely available, just how relevant is Braille in the modern world? To examine this question, I am delighted to welcome to the podcast a knowledgeable panel of guests. Dave Williams is chair of the Braillists Foundation. Megan Paul demonstrated her passion for Braille by winning the junior category of the Onkyo Braille Essay Competition in 2016. And in her spare time, Megan serves on the Gloucestershire Sight Loss Council and helps teach parents Braille. Masuma Ali is an engagement manager in the Southeast for Thomas Pocklington Trust and uses Braille extensively in her work. Well, Dave, Megan, Masuma, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Dave, if I could start with you, can you tell us a little bit about the Braillists Foundation?
Thanks, Darren. So Braillists began life as a focus group to test the Canute multi-line Braille e-reader, which is produced by Bristol Braille Technology. And they realised pretty quickly that they couldn't do this without the input of Braille readers. So a few of us came together as a focus group to test that product. And very quickly, we got on to talking about other Braille related issues, the extent to which Braille is used, where you might get a particular Braille book, how people felt about the adoption of Unified English Braille. So there were a whole raft of issues that we started talking about, and people would come together face to face to talk about Braille. So this was a kind of an informal community, really, of people with an interest in Braille, and our forum began to grow and our newsletter subscribership began to grow. And we felt that if we were going to take things to the next level, if we were going to ever perhaps start some Braille projects, maybe do a bit of Braille teaching and support industry by organizing our testing efforts, then we really should establish ourselves, which is what we did at the start of 2020. And then, of course, coronavirus came along. So like many organizations, we started being much more active online. And so at the time of recording, we've put on, I think, somewhere in the region of 80 hours of community calls, including Braille tuition, but other subjects as well. But the theme, I suppose, that's run all the way through is that all the people that turn up for these calls are people with a real keen interest in Braille.
That's brilliant. It's really interesting, I think, to hear about an organisation, that a grassroots organisation that's kind of come into being, sprung up all about Braille, but that actually started out because of a development in modern Braille technology. Now, I appreciate you're not from Bristol Braille Technology, but for anybody who might not know about it, what is the Canute?
Canute really is an attempt at a multi-line Braille e-reader. So it's a 9-line by 40-cell display, so 360 cells of Braille on a single device. And if people are interested to learn more, you can, of course, find Bristol Braille Technology. But, you know, from a Braillist's point of view, I think there was a sense that Braille had somehow lost its way a little bit. And we wanted to kind of come together as Braille readers to see what we could do to really fly the flag for Braille, to champion Braille, to celebrate Braille in all its many guises. So we've got a podcast, we've got an active email forum, many of us are active on the Braille support group on Facebook. As I've mentioned, there's a newsletter, and then our our online and face-to-face meetings.
Brilliant. Thank you, Dave. Yep, we'll certainly be returning to this question of Braille technology and development and the exciting future that hopefully affordable or more affordable Braille technology can play in the future. But before we get to that, a kind of a basic question really for you, Dave. Why do you think it's important for blind people to learn and use Braille at all?
Braille is literacy. It's a means of being able to read independently, frees your ears to hear your environment. Not only do you perceive spelling, punctuation, layout, and you know, and all the kind of technical benefits of reading, but you're also able to find your own voice. So if you're reading a story, for example, your interpretation of that story isn't coloured by a narrator. So this was really driven home to me when I became a dad. And I wanted to read the bedtime story with my son. Stephen Fry does an excellent job as an audiobook narrator, obviously, but I'm the dad, you know, and it's my job to read the bedtime story. I want to do the voices. So I did, and I found that to be a really precious time, spending the last few minutes of every day sitting with my son, being able to read the bedtime story. So we know about the applications in the workplace, being able to make notes in meetings while still being able to listen to everyone in the room, delivering presentations, so being able to refer to your notes without having something talking in your ear, and also obviously the ability to proof a document and make sure that your standard of literacy is as good as it can be. But for me, Braille really is about finding your own voice, which then leads to independence and hopefully more opportunities for blind and partially sighted people.
You mentioned Unified English Braille, UEB. Is it fair to say, do you think, that Braille is still very much in development? And if so, how does that happen?
Unified English Braille was adopted around the world about 5 years ago, and Unified English Braille is one code across the English-speaking world. And I think it's fair to say that certainly in the area of literacy, that code is now very stable. There is still work going on in some of the more technical aspects, but in terms of literary Braille, the Braille code is stable, and it's had to evolve. We didn't have in literary Braille any real substantive change since the 1930s, and during that time printers changed quite a lot. When you write print now, it's not unusual to see, you know, a hashtag, for example. I'm not sure how you would have done that in the old standard English Braille that we used to use. There isn't a separate computer code in Unified English Braille. Many of those signs that have crept into everyday usage are now a standard part of the code.
Thank you. That's really interesting, because, of course, with, you know, programming code and the development of all of these different notations around scientific subject matter, Braille has had to keep up. And I guess it's kind of testament to the quality and flexibility of Braille that something so simple is actually so adaptable.
It is. And it's not just the code, of course. You can use Braille for any number of subjects, Braille in any language. You can use Braille for poetry and for music and all sorts of different use cases. Braille can be written on all sorts of different types of material. There's Braille jewellery out there if you go and look for it. There's Braille on medicine packaging. And of course, we've got electronic Braille where small rounded pins raise and lower to make the shapes needed to represent Braille characters. So it is quite versatile and it can be used in many different contexts. And while clearly, you know, we set up the Braillist Foundation to promote Braille usage, that is not to the exclusion of other formats. Clearly, there are times when Braille does run up against limitations. If you're washing up, for example, you can't very easily read Braille at the same time while you're doing that. If your hands are very cold, it's difficult to read Braille. But then there are times when audio can feel very invasive in a very quiet environment, for example, or in a very noisy environment, it can be quite hard to hear the speech on your smartphone. So Braille might be useful there. So as blind people, we often have reduced choices, and I think we need Braille and audio and other formats to make sure that we have access to the information in the format we want, when we want.
Wonderful. Thank you, Dave. I think at this point, if I may, Megan, I'd love to bring you into the conversation at this point. You are clearly passionate about Braille. When did you first start using Braille?
I learned Braille when I was four, alongside my peers learning to read and write. They all went off to practice their writing and joined up writing. And my joke was that my dots were always joined up. So I learned Braille when I was four with an excellent teacher. I think that made all the difference. I mean, for me at the time, it was, as it should be, I think, it was print for me. You know, it was never a question that I wasn't going to get away with not learning to read and write in Braille, which was my equivalent of print. I guess because I was born completely blind, that has made the difference. I imagine it is harder to learn as a person gets older. I'm passionate about it in the same way as somebody would say, you know, you don't really hear someone say, oh, I'm really passionate about print, because it is just everyday writing, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. I guess for somebody to be passionate about print, it might be more of along the lines of, I'm passionate about books. And there's kind of the assumption that you're passionate about print if you say that, whereas actually,
I'm passionate about books. I'm also very passionate about writing. I am a writer, a creative writer. For my work, I write a lot of journalism and things. And then I also enjoy writing short stories and fiction in my spare time. And that's what I did my degree in. And for me, I always have two books on the go, reading-wise. I have an audio book and a Braille book, although now it's reading on my Braille note taker with my little SD card that's got all my books on it. It is, like Dave said, it's about choice. So I would listen to my audiobooks in the bath. It's a very different process for me of reading in Braille. And I think actually people are becoming more aware of that now, that a lot of people, not just people who are visually impaired, are using Audible and all these different podcasts and audiobook stuff. And they are getting it that actually, for me, reading in Braille is not the same as listening. In fact, when I was at uni, all my academic stuff I would listen to read by my screen reader. Anything fun, I read in Braille. I don't know why that is. It's just, I guess it's different ways of processing things for me.
No, absolutely. I think I find that Braille is quite a personal medium for me. So I can definitely identify where you're coming from there. I think we'll return to the kind of question of audiobooks alongside Braille material a little bit later on. But for the moment, I think you are selling yourself short here. You're actually an award-winning writer. Can you tell us a little bit about the entry that you submitted to the Onkyo Braille Essay Competition in 2016? How on earth did that come about?
Well, I must have found out about the essay contest somewhere, and I was thinking about it the other day. I can't believe it was 4 years ago. And now I have all these new anecdotes to add to the series that I related in my essay, and new ideas have come to me about Braille, new things have occurred to me. It was a really fun process writing this 1,000-word essay talking about my childhood. It was called The Bumpy Road, the essay, which was actually a bit of a metaphor for sitting and reading Braille in the car with these giant slabs of Braille books, and talking about how my parents would always pack 16 volumes of Swallows and Amazons or whatever it was into the suitcase. And yes, we were taking three suitcases to be checked into the airport, because there was no way that they could take me on holiday without loads of audiobooks, but also stuff to read, because I was a massive bookworm. And then, yeah, when the final Harry Potter book came out, they sent you, well, no, it wasn't the, it was one of the penultimate ones. They sent you three volumes per week, which I think was how they were going about producing it. And it was just like, I mean, it would take me a day to read three volumes and then I'd be itching for the next bit.
Masuma, if I could bring you in at this point, how did you start getting into Braille?
My very first memories of learning Braille are a little bit blurred and probably not the most positive, actually. So it was at a school in Northwest England. And I don't actually remember that process of where I sort of learnt the basic letters, but I just have this memory of this one incident where I was asked to read off of a book and I couldn't figure out what it said, or I didn't know the word. And then I was punished like a naughty little child and was told to stand up. And I just remember thinking in that moment that I didn't like Braille. So whilst that was quite negative, when we moved to London, I actually attended a school for children that were visually impaired. I think about 5 or 6. So I was a little bit older by this point. And, you know, I do remember learning Braille at that point. And the way it was done, it was made fun. It was something that I enjoyed. You know, that was definitely a much more positive memory. But even with the negativity, you know, it hasn't changed my love for Braille. And I feel fortunate that I was actually a child that had the opportunity to learn Braille and that technology didn't remove that from my life, which, you know, is definitely something that seems to be happening more and more nowadays, that children learn technology first before learning Braille. I know that's not always the case, but it's becoming more predominant.
Absolutely. I think one reason we really were keen to highlight Braille during National Braille Week is to kind of make the point that actually Braille is just as important now as it ever has been for a blind person, for all sorts of reasons. And it's not a case of Braille versus technology. It's a case of Braille and technology, and sometimes literally hand in hand, isn't it?
Absolutely. I agree. I think there is a place in society now where Braille and technology can work together. For me, I'm somewhat lazy now when it comes to reading Braille for leisure. As a child, that was my go-to medium to read. Now it's more audiobooks. But for me, Braille and technology beautifully come together is in my career. In terms of taking notes, minutes, running workshops and presentations, I'm not one of these people that's grasped the art of listening to a screen reader babbling in the background in my ear and being able to talk. And, you know, I like the idea, and it's a comfort almost for me to be able to read the Braille and deliver my presentation. I find that it's more natural. If I'm listening to speech, I almost sound like a robot, just like my screen reader does. So yeah, and because I have a Braille note taker for work, it's made Braille a lot more compact and a lot more portable. How, you know, a sighted person would think about picking up an iPad or a laptop or something as a kind of medium of transporting information. That's what my note taker does for me. It's my go-to and taking it out with me. And, you know, they're small, they're compact. You can put them in the handbag now. You know, they're not these big, chunky devices anymore.
Yeah, yeah. It's not the sort of thing that you'd struggle to fit in the boot of a heavy-laden, holiday-packed car, is it?
Absolutely not, yeah.
Fantastic, thank you. I think at this point, it'd be really good if we kind of, I'm just going to throw out a few questions, and any of you kind of please do feel free to chip in. And I guess we've kind of covered this a little bit, but I'm going to be a little bit more explicit with this. For each of you, what Braille technology are you using at the moment?
I couldn't be without my Braille note taker. I was a HumanWare Braille note taker user for a long time. I loved the Apex, which was the little Braille note taker. It was my baby. And then sadly, it did my undergraduate degree with me and then started to die. And so I got the Braille note touch for my master's degree. And I was so disappointed with it, because it's entirely run on an SD card. And guess what? A term into my master's degree, the SD card failed. I had backed up most of my work. And so since then, I've been using the HIMSS note takers, the Braille Sense. And now I've just started using the Polaris, which is the size and shape of my beloved baby Apex, but actually in some ways not as good. So one of my main criticisms with the Polaris, I don't want to get too technology driven about it, is that it can't keep up with me when I type. So I don't know if there are any other Polaris users here. Often it just doesn't put spaces between my words, or it'll do random things. And I think there's some random letter combination on there that will just repeat a word. So say if I write the word dog, if I press something, it just puts dog, 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 which is really strange. But the great thing, I suppose, the Humanware products had their own system, and they now are working with on an Android platform, as is the Polaris now. But the HIMS Sense Note Taker worked on a very early version of Windows. And I think it's quite cool that the early note takers were very much on Planet Note Taker. They kind of had their own operating system, and you could save documents in formats that you could put on the computer and read. But I do think it's quite cool. I mean, the HIMS products have got tab keys and escape keys and little things like that that aren't super complicated, but bring it into the modern world. Having said that, there are loads of features on them I don't use, so I never use them as a media player or anything like that. They could quite happily strip that out and charge me 500 quid less, and I'd still be in love with them.
It's interesting, actually, and I echo the comment around, you know, not using the additional features, because I see my Braille note taker as my pen and paper. You know, a pen and paper doesn't give you media options and the ability to listen to the radio and such. And for me, you know, my note taker is my pen and paper. So the basic function is the Braille, and that's the most important function of it for me. Everything else is secondary, and I'd say strip it and make it cheaper and more affordable.
The Braille technology I use the most would have to be Braille screen input on my iPhone. So every iPhone, iPad, iPod Touch has built into it a feature of the screen reader called Braille screen input. And I understand that similar functionality is available that can be added to Android devices. And basically what this means is that when you are confronted with a text box, so where you're composing a message, an email, maybe you're writing a calendar appointment, a note, or something on social media, you can activate the Braille keyboard on screen, and basically you can use your six Braille writing fingers to write text. And so you write it in Braille, and the screen reader back translates that and puts the text in the edit box. So it works really well. And the great thing about it is, of course, you don't need to have any additional hardware with you. It's already built right into your phone. So I find that invaluable, because hunting and pecking around a QWERTY keyboard on a screen, I find, is just too slow and frustrating. There are issues with dictation around accuracy and privacy. So for me, being able to compose text using Braille screen input is perfect. And I probably do that several times an hour. So that's the Braille technology I'm using the most. After that, then it would probably be the Orbit Reader, which is a lower cost Braille display. So the Orbit Reader, if you're not familiar with it, it's a 20 cell Braille display, comes with an SD card on which are books, and then you can create your own notes. So there's a Braille keyboard on there. It has excellent battery life, and it's really a kind of a starting point if you've never had a Braille display before. So it sells for under £500, and there are grants available for it as well. So if I want to read something in Braille, I quite often will reach for the Orbit Reader. And I, during lockdown, one of the things I started doing was mucking about in the kitchen, much to the chagrin of Mrs. Williams, and I started making bread. And so when I was checking the recipe, what I would do is I put my Orbit Reader inside a plastic sandwich bag, and the pins are really solid and quite pronounced on the Orbit Reader, so it was still very easy to read the Braille through the plastic bag. So that would probably be the second option. And then finally, really old tech is the venerable Perkins Brailler that I keep on the dining room table, because again, during lockdown, when I was going out to the supermarket, I would take with me a Braille list, a hard copy Braille list, you know, and I would roll it around the handle of the trolley so that I could read in Braille, you know, what we needed to get. And for me, having a piece of paper with Braille on, particularly something like a list, there just isn't a better way of being able to skip forwards and backwards and up and down to the top or the bottom, you know, in a kind of accessing Braille in a very sort of non-linear way. It's a bit like, you know, when you sort of get your bank statement and you kind of run your hand down till you find the date that you're interested in or the amount that you're interested in. So for me, hard copy still has a really important role, not least of which, you know, we're coming up to Christmas. I'd like to be able to read my own Christmas cards, thank you very much, and the friends and family that I have who read Braille, I'll send those cards in Braille as well.
Oh, well, yeah, I do remember actually one of the best Christmas cards and most surprising that I ever received was from one of my friends who I had no idea was secretly learning Braille and then sent me a Braille card that they'd actually made by hand, just punching a pencil in the back of the card for each dot.
I love it when people do
that. Oh, wow.
Well, and another affordable, low-tech way of producing small amounts of Braille, I think, Darren, you alluded to it earlier, and I still think the slate and stylus have a huge role to play. Unfortunately, they've kind of gone a bit out of fashion in the UK. They're not really taught in schools. But when the Braillists has exhibited at you know, exhibitions such as Site Village, we sometimes take a few you know, hand frames along with the stylus and invite people to have a go. And actually, people are really interested, particularly young people, because they love the fact that here's a way of making Braille that fits in your pocket, doesn't require batteries, doesn't require software. All you need is a little bit of card, like a train ticket or a receipt or a postcard, and you can write some Braille. You can write down, you know, it might be an amount or a person's name or just something that you need to remember. And it's really effective, and it only costs, you know, a couple of quid. So I still think that there is a role. For me, the kind of the hand frame, as we call them in the UK, slate and stylus is a sort of American terminology, is the equivalent to the pencil. I love the technology. I love the fact that people have got Braille note takers, and long may that continue, and that we are getting lower cost Braille displays. But we mustn't forget things like the Dymo labeler or hand frames, because sighted people, you know, they haven't given up post-it notes, have they?
I think what we're kind of alluding to here, I guess, with this discussion is that actually what this development of Braille in all sorts of ways, with Braille being so versatile, it's actually increasing a blind person's level of choice in so many different areas. For instance, again, we've kind of touched on this, I know, but when looking at a book, you can now, with access to affordable Braille technology, either get it in an electronic Braille format, a physical Braille format, an e-format that you can have read out to you from a speech-enabled device that can be pretty inexpensive these days, or an audiobook. And there are more books available now than ever before.
That's right. So the delivery mechanism has changed. You know, historically, if you wanted a Braille book, it would come in many large hard copy Braille volumes. You know, Megan was describing trying to cram them into a suitcase in the boot of the family car. But obviously now, you know, Braille can also be delivered electronically. Hard copy Braille books are still available, I should say. Nobody's stopped that. But if you have a electronic Braille device, then you can either download a Braille formatted file from the RNIB or other sources are available, and you can put that file onto your device and take it with you. But of course, there are mainstream commercial electronic book platforms such as Kindle or Apple Books or Google, and your screen reader will translate that text into Braille, not in 100% of cases, but certainly in more than 95% of cases, those books are accessible. And so you connect your Braille display via Bluetooth to your phone or your tablet, and then you can have access to literally millions and millions of books in Braille.
Fantastic. Yeah, it really is quite incredible, the wealth of material that is available all of a sudden. I'll tell you what, I wish I'd had this amount of access to stuff back when I was a student. What would you most like to see in the future that Braille hasn't done or hasn't been or hasn't happened yet?
One of the things that I'm seeing recently about Braille, which has been in the 4 years since I wrote my essay, is how intertwined Braille is with love. And the reason that I've started to see this quite strongly recently is that I am supporting a course where parents of visually impaired children are learning Braille so that they can help their children learn to read and write as well. I hadn't expected it to be. It's a moving experience because these are parents who are talking passionately about their children who are, you know, most of them are only a few months old and they've been told their child's blind and they said, well, you know, I want to help my child learn to read and so I need to learn Braille. Now, Braille isn't easy to learn, even for a sighted person who can do it by sight. My mum learned grade one Braille when I was four. So I would really like to see more of that. And I do think it's disappointing that parents aren't given more support and also people around the visually impaired child, as well as the child themselves often, aren't given more support to learn Braille. I don't know why it's acceptable to say to a young child, okay, well, don't worry about learning to read print because you can just listen to everything and it's the same. And it's not, sadly, because their spelling will inevitably be affected and their understanding of language. And I honestly don't think I could have got my degrees without Braille. It would have been very difficult.
For me, I would say that I would like it if Braille became more mainstream. So from a sighted viewpoint, people wouldn't see Braille and be like, oh my God, this is Braille. It would just, they'd see it around everywhere, so they'd accept it. So for example, I know in America, if you're staying in any kind of hotel accommodation and such, all their door numbers have Braille on them. And it's just normal. It's not seen as anything different. And it's just accepted as the kind of mainstream. You know, there's so much that could be where Braille's placed and nobody thinks twice about it because it's just alongside the print. You know, people don't walk around saying, oh, look, there's print on this door, or, you know. And, you know, this could be applied to things like lifts and doors and such that I've mentioned. But I also think, you know, we can bring it down to more kind of social aspects and in terms of games and such that are available. I mean, at the moment, you have to go to a specialist VI distributor organization to get things like Uno cards in Braille or a deck of standard playing cards. You know, you couldn't walk into your local store and buy a standard deck, you know, buy a deck of Braille playing cards. And I think, you know, for me, one of the things that my family's really got into playing is the card version of Monopoly. Actually took the time out and I Brailled the cards up, which then allowed me to play alongside my family. And it's that I'd love to see, just the acceptance of Braille on more items, you know, whether it be food packaging or whether it be selling more games that had Braille as the standard. So basically accessibility included in from day one and not something that I or any other Braille user has to input and adapt for themselves.
So the mission of the Braillist Foundation is simply more Braille, and I would absolutely second everything that Megan and Masumra have said there, that certainly we would passionately love to see more Braille in the world, more access to Braille. And what we sort of trying to build at the Braillists is a network where, you know, we not only sort of challenge, you know, attitudes around Braille, you know, this idea that somehow Braille has gone away or it's dated or it's too complicated or it's too slow. You know, you look at people like Gary O'Donoghue, who presents, you know, from the US. He's the BBC's Washington correspondent, and he quite often delivers pieces to camera using Braille and doesn't make a, you know, big deal about it. But, you know, to try and hold up people like that as role models for younger people and say, actually, do you know what? Braille can enable you to be successful and independent in the world. But we also want to share, you know, Braille skills. So if you have Braille skills or you're willing to share Braille skills, then do reach out to the Braillist Foundation so that we know you're there. So then the next time somebody comes along and says, well, how do I learn, you know, Braille music, or what if I want to study physics in Braille, or some other aspect, then we can point them in your direction. That information needs to be widely available, and it's not, it's hard to find. You know, we've been approached in the past by artists who've wanted to include Braille in their installations and they haven't got a clue where to start. So, you know, we perhaps need some more standards and a bit more information sharing to really foster you know, an environment where you can find out. If you want to know about Braille, if you want to include Braille in your product, then we make that as easy as possible for people. And then hopefully in the future, we'll have more Braille.
It really is clear that Braille is just as transformative today for blind and partially sighted people as it was when Louis Braille first demonstrated this revolutionary tactile reading and writing system nearly 200 years ago. I would like to thank our wonderful guests, Dave Williams, Megan Paul, and Masuma Ali, for joining us on this special episode of the Blind Spot podcast. I'm Darren Pascal, and it has been a pleasure exploring Braille in modern life. Thank you very much indeed for your company today.
You've been listening to The Blind Spot, a podcast from Thomas Pocklington Trust. If you'd like to find out more about what we do at TPT, check out our website. Go to www.pocklington-trust.org.uk. And don't forget to subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss the next episode. Thank you for listening.